Perfect. Okay, we're going to do stuff in Megillah Esther today, and it's going to be on two psukim that I've always had issues with and try to figure stuff out, and it's really going to be like the best stuff that I can find. Perek Yud Pasuk Aleph, toward the very, very end of the Megillah, it says, V'yasam ha-melech ha-chashverosh mas ala aretz, he made a tax upon the land, v'iyah ha-yam in the islands of the sea. V'chomayse tokvu g'vrosu parshas gedulas mordechai, parashas gedulas mordechai shagadol ha-melech, all the greatness, the stories of all the strength and power that the king had done, haloim k'suvim al-sefer divar yam l'malchi madi opras, you can find them in the chronicles of the kings of Mede and Persia. Now, The Gemara tells us, actually, and I think it's Yud Aleph on the Beis of Megillah, that whenever it says the words, Hu Achashverosh, it indicates, it says, who something, that he was a tzaddik or a rasha his entire life. Like, Hu Avraham is referring to, he was a tzaddik his entire life. Hu Achashverosh, he was a rasha his entire life, from the beginning of his life till the end of his life. But you have to wonder, why was he a rasha? If you think about this, it really shouldn't have been, there shouldn't have been anything evil within what Achashverosh was doing. He wasn't doing anything that was completely evil. I mean, look, in the beginning, he was manipulated by Haman to be able to destroy the Jews. But in the end, he seems to be a good guy. He ended up giving in to the Jews. That's what it seems like. So why is it all of a sudden he's considered like an evil person, that everything's bad, that he's done something evil, that he's evil from the beginning until the very, very end? How does that work?
Because
there was one thing, that killing his, I mean, Vashti was evil. Even better, right? But there was one thing that Achashverosh never wanted. And even with the two tzaddikim that were around him constantly, he had Esther and Mordechai around him constantly, it was one thing he never wanted his entire time. In Daniel, in the very beginning, and in Ezra, I think it's actually in Ezra, it says by Ezra that when Achashverosh became king, Koresh had already made something, which Koresh had decided that they were going to build the foundations of the Beis HaMikdash. So he allowed the Jews to go back, and they built the foundations. They dug the foundations of the Beis HaMikdash, they built the foundations of the Beis HaMikdash, and they were ready to go. When Achashverosh became king, everything stopped. He wrote and said, no one is allowed to build up the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to do anything anymore. You can't build anything further. When Esther made the party both times, Achashverosh said to her, Ad chatzi ha-malchus v'seyas, you could do up until half my kingdom, you can go ahead and do it. You can do whatever you want. But you can do whatever you want when it comes down to it, but you can't build the Beis HaMikdash. I'll give you anything, but not the Beis HaMikdash. Even at the end of his life, when all the Jews have it good and Hamalek is destroyed and everything's gone, but the Beis HaMikdash still wasn't rebuilt. Mordechai probably asked for it. You'd assume that other people asked for it, and it just never happened. It didn't happen during that time at all. What does that mean? Why is it? So granted, he wasn't a rasha, that he wasn't a sadistic murderer, but he was a person who despised the Beis HaMikdash and didn't want the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. No matter how much pressure he got from anyone, that is a rasha. That is a person who defines a rasha. A rasha is somebody who absolutely refused to let anything happen during his time, no matter what. That's the idea behind what happens in this pasuk. And what we want to say is, Vayasam Melech HaKashverosh Masal, he made a tax. He allowed people to do certain things, but he wouldn't go any further than that. He wouldn't take it any further than what it already was. He just allowed it to be just simple, and that's that. And that's just not good enough. And simply put, that's just not good enough from what it was beforehand. Just wasn't cool enough. What is the purpose of this pasuk? So why do we say this over here? Why do we call it over here? So we say like this. Rav Tzadok HaKohen says in Pshat, they were very much afraid of the ruling kingdom. And therefore, they put in the beginning of the end of the Megillah something awesome about Achashverosh. That if you look in the beginning of the Megillah, it says Achashverosh is unbelievable. You look at the end of the Megillah, Achashverosh is unbelievable. He's just a person who's in charge. When you're under a certain kingdom, you kind of have to give in to them a little bit. So they put in all this stuff about Persia and Mede and about all these people around there. Rav Avigdor Miller says it was so necessary. You know, there are people that say that Megillah Esther was not written by Mordechai and Esther. It was written in the times of the Hashmonaim 250 years later. When the Hashmonaim came around, they not only wrote their book of what was happening during times of the Greeks, they wrote a book that was entirely about Mordechai and Esther and about what had happened by Purim. But Mordechai and Esther didn't put it together. They did. And somehow this got put in and not the book of the Hashmonaim and stuff like that, which is absolutely unbelievable. Says Rav Avigdor Miller, this proves that that couldn't be. It must have been written at a time when Persia was in charge. Because why else would you put in the beginning of the Megillah how awesome Achashverosh was, and at the end of the Megillah how awesome Achashverosh was? It must be that they were worried about Achashverosh, and they were under Persian rule, and that's the reason why it's mentioned over here. Why is that such a chiddush? The Maral says in Ner Mitzvah, you have to know what Persia is. The Gemara says about Persians that Persian, I'm going to qualify this because I know that I'm video right now, and there might be Persian people watching. So this is referring to Persian people 2,000 years ago who are not Jewish. Okay, here we go. So that'll make it a little bit better. The Gemara says that all Persians are like bears. They eat like bears. They drink like bears. They have hair like bears, all over their body like bears, right? And they act entirely like bears. The Pshat says the Maral in saying such a thing. Is that just like a bear goes and tries swallowing everything around it. He's this huge creature that just wants to take over and is a destroying creature. Wants to take over everything near him. That's what Ahasuerus was. Ahasuerus wasn't a creature that wanted to take over everything. And even when he had everything in his fingertips, he had everything he could possibly want. He had 127 Medinos. He still wants more. And that's why he made the taxes at the end. He's a bear. This type of person is not okay with just what he has. He needs to have more and more and more and more to swallow more and more. He always felt like he was missing something. And that's the idea behind what it means that he was a dove shakul, a bear that was destructive that took over everything over there. That's the idea behind it. There's another reason why this tax was there. He had just heard about a rebellion. One of the reasons why Esther, right? Oh, you're going to have to get him. You want to try? Let's try to rock him. This is the one problem of having it at home. Okay, either way, the Miam Lois and the Eshkola Kofer says, Ahasuerus knew there were people that were rebelling against him. Haman had rebelled against him. And his whole idea was he was worried the entire time that Haman was trying to take over the kingdom. And kind of he was. That was a little bit of an issue. There was an issue with Esther as well. But there was something that was happening during that time, especially the Amalekim. In order to take care of all that, says Eshkola Kofer and the Miam Lois, he purposely made a tax. Why? To weed out all the evil people. What happens when you overtax the people? They're going to start fighting back. So Ahasuerus would know exactly who the evil people were, the people that were rebelling against them, and he'd send a huge army up against those people. So he did this tax in order to figure out who's doing what when it comes down to it. He wanted to find out who was going to rebel against them, who has rebelled against them, and that's that. He wanted to find out what happened at that point. Divin Ezra says, do you realize how powerful Ahasuerus became? 127 Medinos. Can you imagine anybody nowadays being in charge of 127 Medinos? But back then, you only ruled over the stuff that was right around you. You had no ability to get all the way far, you know, far out there. Even Alexander the Great, how long was he in charge of the world, the known world that he was known for conquering? How many years? 10 years? 12 years? Alexander the Great did not have it for very long. And Ahasuerus, he became so powerful so quickly because of Mordechai. Says Ibn Ezra, it was all because he helped the Jews and he allowed the Jews to go there, and that's what ended up happening as well. The Eshkol HaKofer says even the people that were far away, people that were living in India, in China, all the way in Western Europe, all the people that were really far away that Ahasuerus should not have been able to get, but they were so scared. They were so scared they sent him gifts. They made sure, they even, so to speak, paid taxes because they were so afraid that Ahasuerus would come after them and do something to them. That's how awesome Ahasuerus was, and it wasn't just because of him. We already mentioned before how Ahasuerus was worried in the beginning of his kingdom about the Beis HaMikdash being rebuilt. When he made a sitna and he decided there was no Beis HaMikdash was going to be rebuilt, 113 countries rebelled against him. There are 127 Medinos that he was in charge of, 127 that he was in charge of, but there are 240 kingdoms in the world, 240 kingdoms altogether. 127 he ruled over, 113 rebelled against him. There were 113 countries that were completely gone, they wanted nothing to do with them. And the only way that they would come back is when Mordechai was there, all of a sudden they came back. Once he started doing good things for the Jews, 113 countries ended up coming back and made peace with them, and they were willing to go through. And not only that, Ahasuerus was even willing to tax them, and they didn't rebel against him. We know in the beginning of the Megillah that he was in charge of 127 Medinos. That wasn't good enough. He was really in charge of 240. There were 240 Medinos under his auspices, under his dominion. And 113 rebelled against him, and he was able to, at the end of his life, take back those 113, tax them, and take care of all of them. In fact, it could be that he only got it because Mordechai was so successful in his position. He went out, says the Malbim, to the different lands, traveled everywhere, and told them, join our kingdom. If you join us, then he's going to give you something back. Ahasuerus is going to give you something back. And that's what happened over here. It was Mordechai who was behind everything, and he was the one who put everything together. Paschagin HaKasav says, if you look earlier in the Megillah, he lowered the taxes. Why did he lower the taxes? We all remember that, right? Why did he lower taxes? Because he wanted to find out who Esther was from. Esther was obviously part of a certain nation, but he had no idea from where. And he said, I'll lower taxes to see where Esther is really from. I want to find out where Esther is really from. Now that he knew that she was Jewish, he said, okay, Jews don't have to pay taxes. Every other nation has to pay taxes. So he raised the taxes for every other nation, but he never made the Jews pay because of Esther. That was the gift that he gave in the beginning. If you tell me where you're from, I'll lower the taxes for your people. And he followed through on it. He ended up following through and doing exactly that, lowering the taxes for the Jews, but keeping the taxes up and raising them for everyone else out there, which is kind of an ideal situation for us. It would be an unbelievable thing for him to absolutely take everything back. But the Yismach Moshe, Chassidus HaSefer, says literally the exact opposite. Takes the exact opposite view. He didn't show any favoritism to the Jews whatsoever. He raised taxes and, in fact, made sure that the Jews paid. And according to Hamorsha Megillah, he even made sure. Haman came up to him before and said, I'm willing to give you 10,000 kikar kesef. 10,000 kikar kesef in order to kill all the Jews. We just learned not too long ago, a kikar is how much? A kikar is 3,000 shekel. 3,000 shekel. 10,000 kikar kesef is 10,000 times 3,000. That's 30 million shekel kesef. 30 million shekel kesef. Now, shekel is a weight. Let's say that it's an ounce and a half of silver. An ounce and a half. You're dealing with almost $500 per shekel of silver that Haman was willing to pay. 30 million shekels is what he was willing to pay Haman, willing to pay Achashverosh. 30 million times 500 means he was willing to give Achashverosh to kill the Jews $1.5 billion. $1.5 billion. What do you got? 15 billion? Am I off by that? It's 500, right? 1.5. Wait, because it was 30 million. You add on, 2 zeros plus 1, 1,500. No, 500. 1,500. Yeah, you're right. It's 1,500. You're right. It's $15 billion. $15 billion. And what did Achashverosh say back? He said, I don't want it. He said, no. Keep the money. I don't need it. I absolutely don't need it. Right? By the way, I never went to college. I did get all the AP classes. So in theory, I did calculus and I did Cal 2, but I never got anything more than that. So I do feel somewhat bad. But, you know, multiplication. Oh, yeah, that's right also. Yes. Anyway, but altogether, ended up being it was $15 billion. And he went over to the Jews after everything was said and done. And he turned to Achashverosh and he said to him, Achashverosh turned to them and said, I lost $15 billion because of you guys. I didn't take the money from Haman. And in the end, right, you guys cost me $15 billion. He said, raise it. You go yourselves. You owe me $15 billion. And he taxed them. He taxed the Jews. When it says, V'yasam mas, Achashverosh al ha'aretz, that he made this tax, it wasn't on the rest of the people. It was on the Jews themselves, according to Moshe Megillah and this Yismach Moshe. He told them to do it. You want to take the money away from other people? You can, but that's what it's supposed to. You owe me all of that money. So some say after that they went to the Amalekim that they had destroyed and took, although they didn't take any spoils from themselves, they took from the spoils that they were allowed to take and gave it, they ended up giving it over to the other people, meaning to Achashverosh, to pay for their taxes that they themselves owed. But that was the bad thing. So the Pashag and Iksav said that they didn't owe any taxes whatsoever, it's only the other nations that needed it. But according to the Yismach Moshe, they did have to pay it. What's up?
Well, Mordechai inherited from Haman.
So you could pay it from Haman's stuff itself because he probably had $15 billion that he was willing to pay originally. So he must have had it. Right. So Esther would have just been able to pay it off. Maybe that's exactly what happened. The Jews ended up not paying any taxes because Esther and Mordechai just gave the money straight ahead to Achashverosh and did that. Although you should know there is a big machlokas what they did with that money. And it's likely that that money went toward the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. How did they get so much money? Darius II gave them a ton of stuff. But you have to have millions, billions of dollars to build the likes of what the second Beis HaMikdash was. The huge building that they had. Who was financing this? Darius II had some money, but it says how much he gave. Who had everything else? It was Haman's stuff. All of Haman's money was given directly to the Beis HaMikdash. Can you imagine that? Imagine looking toward the Old City and seeing the Dome of the Rock. And the Dome of the Rock is supposedly covered with tons of gold, right? And people wonder how we're going to pay for the third Beis HaMikdash. I know we shouldn't wonder because we're Jews and we'll take care of that. But the third Beis HaMikdash, where's the money going to come from? You know what's going to come from? From there. From that gold. And they're going to give it willingly. Because they're going to say, you're right. You were right the whole time. We were wrong. So in order to build the Beis HaMikdash, take it. Take everything. Take it all down, give it to yourselves, and use it to build the Beis HaMikdash. And that's exactly what happened here. Can anyone believe that you could look at Haman's palace, and say, that's what's going to be used to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. That's going to be used to make the second Beis HaMikdash. Nobody thought that way. But that's exactly what happened. And that's exactly what's going to be by the third Beis HaMikdash. Who knows if all of the money that goes toward any commercial to the Super Bowl, right? $3.5 million, $4 million for a 30-second spot. All of that money will be donated to the Jews to build the Beis Hamikdash. All of the money for every commercial that's made in the Super Bowl. Because why not? That's what it's used for. Everybody's going to realize that. I'm not comparing Haman to the Super Bowl. I think Haman's a lot better than that. But regardless, there's something there behind it. Yeah, Noah, what were you going to say?
Well, Abraham, when a power went to Abraham, said, I don't want to say that you made me wealthy.
By the king of Sodom.
Yeah.
Didn't want a city to be able to do that. And yet Shlomo Melech used Hiram Melech Tzur to be able to build the second Beis Mikdash. Also, Avram did take money from Paro,
right.
Melech Mitzrayim. So that already is a stira that's answered in a bunch of different ways. I think I have a shira on it about 6 years ago. Exactly on that. The stira between why you wouldn't take any money from Sodom, but he would take money from Paro Melech Mitzrayim. It depends on what the money is used for and if the people are really donating it L'shem Shemayim or they're doing it on their own, right? They're just doing it because they want the kavod. This might be that they're doing the L'shem Shemayim, and therefore it goes through. And Munisi Tachal, page 283, says that when the Megillah started, Ahasuerus made huge taxes on the people, which made him so wealthy he was able to pay for a 187-day party. How did he pay for the party? Because of the massive taxes that he made when he was first in charge. And Akol Nasu Russian Biyamav, he's called Ahasuerus for that reason. Everybody became poor in his days because of that. He lowered the taxes in honor of his marriage to Esther, but later he brought the taxes back when everything went back to normal. Unfortunately, it's a lesson in Judaism, says Munisi Tachal, says Rav Wolfson. Everything starts over again. We think we're done with Haman. We don't have to worry about Ahasuerus. It's not true. There's always a Haman. There's another Haman that's coming up. There's another Ahasuerus. There's somebody else who's there. And that's the idea of why we take a grogger on Purim. It's just a round robin. It happens again and again and again. We start the Megillah and there's taxes. And then the Suda's made and then the Jews are almost killed. And then we end with taxes being given. It's as if you could read the Megillah all over again. End the Megillah this way and start over. Because that's the way our world works. When we're Jews, it goes one to the other. Note that this is the only time where Ahasuerus is written the way it is. It's the way we read it is Ahasuerus, but it's written Aleph Ches Shin Reish Shin. It doesn't have the Vav inside there. It's written as Ahasuerus. To tell you that we became poor from these taxes that Ahasuerus did. Many people became poor during that time, says Miam Loes. They couldn't pay the taxes until Ahasuerus literally had taken over a few more kingdoms and then charged them and was able to get through them. The Ramban is Mechir Yain says it's all a remez, and I'm not going to go through the remez. The remez is awesome, but it's a huge remez there. The Chassam Sofer, it doesn't make any sense. You pay a few taxes and everybody becomes poor? That's not how taxes work. I mean, it does sometimes.
State of Illinois.
Yeah, maybe in certain states, right? It's like that. But normally, it's not all that horrible. You don't have that where all of a sudden people just become poor because they're paying a few taxes. That's not what happens. How did everybody become poor in his time? Why does the Gemara say everybody became Russian Biyama? They became poor in his time because of this. He says the most brilliant shot. Whenever it says the word mas, mem samach, it is not a monetary tax. It is a human tax. The king is taking people to work for him. It happened by Shlomo Melech. He made a mas, and he had all the people working for him. Certain months of the year, everybody had to work for him. He did the exact same thing by Paro. Paro made sarei misim, officers of taxes. The Jews didn't pay any money that we see. We don't see them giving up any money. We see them using their bodies and slaving over all the work that they have to do for Paro. That we see. We don't see anywhere where they had to actually pay money. By Ahasuerus as well, when he says it made a tax, they made a mas. Originally, the tax was that people had to work for Ahasuerus. And that's the pshat behind when Haman said, the Jews waste our time by saying Shehi Pehi. Shabbos Yom, Pesach Hayom. We can't work for you today, Ahasuerus. We can't be, you know, we have certain days where everybody's supposed to work, but we can't work for you because it's Shabbos today. It's a holiday today. We can't work for you on these days. There's nothing we can do. Said Haman, they never work for you. All these other people are taxed, and the Jews aren't taxed. So he came up with a brilliant plan, said Ahasuerus. Fine. It's a goof tax. You have to pay with your body, and you have to work for me. And if you don't work for me, then you have to give me a ton of money. You're going to have to pay it off instead. And many Jews who couldn't do it had no choice but to pay a ton of money and became poor. That's what it means. Kol Nasu Russian B'yamav, because either they sat there and they had to work with their bodies, or they used up all of their money. They took all of their money because they had to pay their way out of it so they wouldn't have to worry about that stuff. So they got themselves out of it completely. Or people faked it. Because what happens when people have to pay taxes and they don't really want to? They just simply put, they don't do it. They pretend like they don't have any money. Sakol Nasu Rosh B'Yamav is not that literally they became poor. They pretended to be poor so that they wouldn't have to pay the taxes.
Cash business started now.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's all cash business, and then they hide everything inside. They don't give anything to any banks, and then he didn't have to worry about anything. We're going to end with one little piece. Rabbi Elazar Gamiza says, 127 countries were ruled by Achashverosh. 100 are on the land, 27 are in the sea. He says, the remez is in this pasuk. Vayasam HaMelech, Achashverosh, Mas HaLaoretz, Mem Samach is the gematria of 100. Ala Oretz, there were 100 on the land. The Iye Hayam. And there were 27, I should say. Vav Aleph Yud Yud is the gematria of 27. They were on the sea. There were 27 islands, right, so to speak, 100 land places that Achashverosh ruled and 27 islands that Achashverosh ruled. And it's hinted to in the pasuk itself. The Tiferes Shlomo says, if you look at the Luchos, there were two letters that were Benes Hayu Omdin. They were standing with a miracle. The Mem and the Samach. Why were they standing with a miracle? Because the middle of the letter was not attached to anything and yet still stood in place. And not only that, remember the Luchos, you could read them from both sides. So it was straight through. There was nothing holding it together and yet still they were there and they stood right there. B'nais ha'yu omdin. They were miraculously put in exactly where it was supposed to be. Letters were Mem and Samach. That's Mas. Mem Samach. It also refers to the Sam, obviously referring to that. But he says the following. You want to stand benes? You want to be a miracle? You want to be a miracle person? Make sure to say 100 brachos a day. If you say 100 brachos a day, you're guaranteed to have everything that's good in life. And David HaMelech originally instituted it. It's very easy if you're able to daven all three tefillos. You daven Shacharis, Mincha, Maariv, you easily have 92 brachos without doing anything else. You have 92 just from davening a regular Shacharis, Mincha, Maariv. You want to add on benching. You wash one time a day and you bench, that's another six. You have 98, washroom or something else that you eat, and you're perfectly good. You don't have to worry about anything else. That's 100 brachos every single day. 100 brachos is referred to by the mas over here. And the mas, remember, the gra says that every time that the word melech appears without Achashverosh, it refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu itself. Now over here, it does say Achashverosh, but it's not spelled correctly. So it's possible by Yostem HaMelech mas. Keep out Achashverosh because it's not spelled in the right way. The melech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, made us do a mas. He fined us and told us, you should do 100 brachos a day. And if you do 100 brachos a day, everything will be fine. You don't have to worry about anything. Everything will be there for you. You'll live lives filled with miracles and you'll be taken care of from the Sam, the Satan, the evil Satan, and everything that's there. That's a hint also on Chanukah. Not only in Purim do we see that word mas, but on Chanukah we have the Pach Shel Shemen. Pach is again, Pei Chaf is the gematria of 100. To tell us that if we do this correctly, if we take our Purim and our Chanukah and we improve ourselves to the point where we say to ourselves, you know what, I'm going to take on brachos for myself. I'm going to count up my brachos. I'm going to do 100 brachos a day. Then you're going to get to the point where you're living a life filled with miracles. A life where the Chanukah miracle seems like nothing. The Purim miracle seems like nothing. Everything is there for you. It's an awesome level, an unbelievable idea, and something that seriously we could do correctly. So what do we say today? We just said, Achashverosh made a tax. The tax was either a good thing for the Jews or a bad thing for the Jews. Achashverosh was either a hypocrite and a horrible person, a Rasha Mitchilas Vad Sofo, or he was somebody who really wanted to look out for the Jews, and Mordechai was able to help him tremendously in everything that he did. It's possible that Achashverosh made everyone poor, and made everyone poor in order to make sure that he had his taxes, whatever those taxes were. And the end, 127, the answer, the remez, goes into Mem Samach, that Misim really refers to the 100 brachos that a person should make every single day. Shkoyach, everyone. Have a great Freilich and Purim.